Purpose Projects. Welcome to another brand new episode of Purpose Projects, the podcast with the sustainably good stuff. As you might already be confused, no, I am not Boris and I am not Moritz, but my name is Izzy and I am guest hosting today with Moritz. So thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being on this podcast, Izzy. And yet, everyone recognizing your voice right now. Yes, you're right. Izzy has been on this podcast before. She did an interview with us, so she was on the other side. And now she's, the first co-host that isn't Alex or Boris. So I'm really looking forward to that. And not only am I looking forward to Izzy being on this episode, but also Matt Kreutz being on this episode. Matt is the CEO and founder of Firebrand Artisan Breads, and the focus of this brand is very, very special. As they put it in their words, we don't hire people to bake bread, we bake bread to hire people. Only in this statement you can see where their priorities lie, and I think you're going to really hear what Matt has to say about this in this episode, so have fun with this very special episode, and enjoy. Hey, Matt. I'm really, really pleased to talk to you today. And yeah, I just mentioned off air that Izzy is on the podcast. So things are very special today. And first question, of course, how are you? Where are you at the moment? And what's going on?
I am doing well. I am here in Alameda, California at our new production facility here.
Awesome. So here in Germany, I think not too many people have actually heard of you and your brand yet. That's going to change today. And of course, before we talk about Firebrand and everything that's surrounding it, we have to start with you, Matt, to understand the entire story of Firebrand. And we read that you've been baking bread, I think, since 14 years since you're 14. You've mentioned that you've done nothing ever since, so why don't you
I don't really know shit else. I mean, I've been baking since I was 14. I fell into I had to get a job when I was 14, and so got a job at a bagel place and started making bagels and cleaning floors and doing everything there, and then just kind of fell in love with being in that environment, fell in love with like the people who like work in food service. And then, just got one job after another, had a really amazing, trade school within my high school. And so one of the programs was culinary. And so I joined that when I was a junior, and that was just like super transformative, like kind of learning about like, you know, the food service industry and like, it can be a career. And, you know, that class was full of a bunch of like misfits and rejects in that class. And that chef was like really amazing at like being able to like guide and direct young minds to the appropriate path. And, so I got into culinary school after that and then dropped out of culinary school and stayed in California and then, started Firebrand in 2008.
So interesting that you described the food industry and the culinary world as, you know, with the misfits and the rejects and how it was so transformative for you. And I think that's why Moritz also really wanted to reach out and why I've been hearing about your company for a few years now. And of course, we would not be talking to you if you were not doing things differently as far as bakeries. So in 2013, you had the opportunity to employ formerly incarcerated and homeless community members. And since then, you're at the very forefront of creating more quality job opportunities in Oakland, which is amazing. And so I guess we want to know a little bit more about what drove you to implement this employment strategy.
Yeah, so I would love if I had some like amazing strategic like documents or something that like, but it really, like, we didn't know what the hell we were doing for a long time, and some would argue now, but just, you know, we wanted to create an environment at Firebrand that welcomed everybody. And coming from like a punk rock background, coming from like where my mom had some legal issues, we were kind of homeless for about a year and a half there, the first couple years of Firebrand. Like, we wanted Firebrand to be open to everybody. And we didn't want any barriers just because like you had a challenging background. Like, in the food service industry is very, at least that I knew, was very like, where'd you work last? Like, I don't care about what school you went to. I don't care if there's a gap in your, like, what are your skills? And then what's your ability to learn, to listen, and to be a part of the team? And then that was always what we prized more than anything. And so we just kind of took that kind of philosophy and just started kind of applying it to our hiring, and then realized pretty early on in like 2010, 11, 12, that like resumes were useless. Like, background checks were more useless. Cover letters were useless. It was just like we were going through this theater and then hiring people who like didn't work out anyways and didn't make any sense. So we just kind of did away with all of that, not knowing that that was something that, you know, Grayson kind of pioneered as like a philosophy. But, you know, we just kind of went with that. And so that was kind of always, it's always kind of been our thing, of just kind of not worrying about people's backgrounds. And so that kind of transitioned to, hey, let's focus on people with barriers to employment. Okay, let's focus on people now who were formerly homeless or formerly incarcerated, and kind of just moved from there. And then kind of from there, like, okay, how do we provide good jobs to people? And how do we think about jobs? How do we think about employment? How do we think about like how to provide a safe, stable environment? And so kind of, you know, just constantly asking ourselves these questions, you know, to even today, just kind of like, how do we do that best? Yeah, so that's kind of how it evolved. It's really everything at Firebrand is really natural and very like one step at a time progression. There was never any like grand philosophical document or strategy or manifesto or anything.
Yeah,
I just don't know shit else. And so it's just like taking my background and experience and trying to apply it to a place that I've been a worker bee. I'll always be a worker bee. Like, I don't know anything else. And so it's like, hey, when I'm 60, like, am I going to like showing up to this place? Like, am I going to like want to come to work? And so it's kind of always building the place that you always want to be excited to come to, you know? You want to like the people who you work with. You want to be challenged by them. You want them to challenge you. You challenge them. And,
there's two really great things that you mentioned, and I really want to go back to this question that you said, how do we think about work? And I think it's so interesting right now to be talking about open hiring policies and inclusive hiring, especially because, you know, on the one hand, in our current situation, it seems like there are more and more barriers for people to enter into the workforce, but then there's almost this simultaneous quote-unquote labor shortage or talent shortage, and we have the great resignation, and you know, you can find courses on how to write your resume. So I find that so interesting that simultaneously this is happening, and I'm really maybe curious specifically right now in March 2022 and everything that we've been through, especially in the last couple of years, why is the business model of Firebrand so important these days, you know? And maybe if you can speak to if anything's changed in your local community since the pandemic.
Well, I really want to get back to the last thing you said, but I'll have to answer the first part of what you said. So Firebrand's got like a 95-94% retention rate, like, which in the food service industry is like in the United States, like 25-30%.
One question: retention rate for your business is what?
It's like in the 90s, like 92-95%, depending on the month.
No, like customers coming back or
no, like employees.
Employees, okay.
Yeah. So I mean, we didn't go through the Great Resignation, I guess, so far. Knock on whatever. We don't have a hard time getting employees or retaining. I mean, we haven't had a hard time retaining them. I think. Not a hard time. It's always a challenge because you're putting in effort. But I mean, in terms of like these mass exodus and this like craziness, we haven't experienced a lot of it, thank God. And I don't know. I think we try really hard to think about work as a broad spectrum. You know, like there's a cliche of like, bring your whole self to work, which like usually means like, just be nice and shut the fuck up about everything else. And like, just like fit in is like usually what people mean when they say that. And like, we've always kind of been like, hey man, like I think a few years ago, we embraced the fact that we're not a bakery. Like we're in the people business. And like, we like, they always say, like, I heard this something like a while ago that the railroad companies failed because they didn't realize they were in the transportation business. They thought they were in the railroad business. And so when things changed, they didn't know what the fuck to do. And I feel like with us, it's like we made a transition to like, we're in the people business, you know, and if we make good products and we have really great people, we'll get more business and we'll be able to take advantage of opportunities. So we've been able to take advantage of a lot of opportunities now because we have people, whereas a lot of businesses don't have people, they can't keep up, and then they're coming to us to help them out. So we haven't really experienced that, but I think we try to think about the job broadly speaking in terms of like, what does it take to get you here? Are there barriers to getting here? Are there problems going on outside of Firebrand that Firebrand can help with either directly or indirectly? Like we just opened a worker resource center here in Alameda. And so that's staffed by an independent nonprofit whose whole job is to work with our staff and identify areas that like may be a barrier for them to show up to work, to be their best selves, all these things, and help them get the help they need, whether that's GED classes, that's connection to like substance abuse programs, that's housing initiatives, that's, you know, transportation issues, like really work with people to make sure that they can show up and do a good job, but then also show up and feel like it's a safe environment for them to be mentally, physically, and all those things. And that extends out, you know, beyond our four walls. But so we opened that worker resource center to help provide educational opportunities, but then also just additional resources for the staff. And then the second one, I guess, what changes have I noticed in the Bay Area? I think when the pandemic hit, it was super obvious the like gap in the Bay Area of like kind of wealthy, college educated tech folks and then like service workers. And it was so like glaringly obvious, the like huge percentage of the population that have never fucking served anybody in their life. Cause it was like, they didn't know what to do when there's like a problem being served. Like when all these service businesses now had all these challenges with like physical barriers, with new rules, regulations, mandates, da da da, like they flipped the fuck out. Cause it's like, they're just so used to being served and not ever serving anybody. And I mean like literally serving, like you were actually physically helping somebody, not like technical assistance. And I think that was pretty fucking obvious after the pandemic. The like rush to work from home. It's like, that's cool for you, but like my people can't work from home. A lot of people can't work from home. And it's cool that you can, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think people didn't understand what it meant to show up to work anymore. And I feel like they didn't respect the service industry as a whole, and still don't at all. But I feel like that gap was pretty evident when the pandemic hit. It was so like eye-rolly and cringy, the number of complaints we were getting about bullshit. Just bullshit that doesn't matter at all. When you like are at the beginning of a pandemic and don't know what the fuck's going on, and I'm sorry, you can't use Apple Pay right now. My bad.
I totally get your point, Matt, there. And one topic that might have also changed is people losing their homes in the pandemic.
Yes.
And your brand, of course, is very known for employing, especially these people. You just call them like kind of like misfits, but also like people that maybe won't get a new perspective if there wasn't companies like Firebrand. And did you also notice a change there during the pandemic, that maybe people lost their homes and they're like, you're known for helping these people?
Yeah, I mean, Well, I mean, I think the Misfits was separate from being from being homeless or from incarcerated. But I think the homeless problem in Oakland is crazy. It is bananas off the charts bad here. And I think you had hundreds of thousands of people who were one paycheck away from losing their home. And then the pandemic hits and now they're losing their home. Or they're like, they have a job, but they're sleeping in their car. And that was a lot of people in the Bay Area. And then when the pandemic hits, now they're out, you know, and as a city, I don't think we want to deal with that, unfortunately. Like, I don't think there's the appetite to like get in there and help. I feel like people don't want to deal with it. You know, it's messy. People are messy and it's not perfect and you don't get an award for it at the end. But they're people and they shouldn't be sleeping on the goddamn street where they're open to like violence and all kinds of crazy shit that happens to people, drugs. And like, it's crazy out there. And the fact that that's just a thing in California in general is just boggles my mind. Like, it's, I don't want to get too much on a tangent, but it just shows a complete lack of empathy and a complete lack of just giving a shit. Like, put your own like ego and career aside, and who's responsible? Like, who's in charge? You know, like I always say, like, I think our mayor is like an avatar. Like, I don't think she actually really exists. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, where are you? Like, how can you live here? And it, like, well, it doesn't drive you fucking bananas. You know what I mean? Like, how do you just go about your day?
Well, now people are then going to transition their life into what, the metaverse, but these problems will still exist.
Just bury your fucking head in the sand. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's so bad. And they've let it get so bad. It's just such an avoidable tragedy.
I have the sense of a dystopia that there will also be homeless people in the metaverse, because the people will just create their own reality in there as well. Yeah, but Matt, coming back to your rant, I'm gonna call it a rant. So you earlier mentioned that you're in the business of people, and I think by now everyone can know your passion for these people. And once you said Firebrand seeks to stand out at the center of a new wave of capitalism that leverages business to address complex societal problems.
Sure.
And that's, I mean, quite difficult maybe to understand. So I have a very simple question for you. What's the purpose of Firebrand?
So I think we're trying to provide not only good jobs and a safe place for people, but also just kind of like a new way of doing business, a new way of relating to people, a new way of thinking about how a business can be impactful and what the role of a business is. You know, 150 years ago, a business had to have a purpose. Like, it had to be in your corporate charter. And so it's like, you have to serve a purpose. And I think more and more customers are going to be requiring that. But I think as a society, I think there's going to be a time where you have to justify your existence. And if your existence is making bullshit, then maybe you shouldn't be around anymore. But I think like businesses have to be around for more than making shit. Like, we have to be able to leverage what we do to help everybody in our community. Like, there's this concept that Michael Porter, I think, first kind of like articulated around shared value, you know, where it's like, as a business, I'm not only creating a profit, but I'm creating a value for the staff. I'm creating value for the community, as I hope I am, you know, value for everybody here, you know, that's not only, it's not for me, it's not for just one group. And so I think as a business, we have to think differently about how we exist and how we relate and how we, what does it mean to create a profit? What does it mean to create a job? You know, like, just because you create a job, it's like, doesn't mean you're doing anything like for somebody. Like, you're just creating a fucking job. Like, they're serving you, but like, are you serving them? and like, how is that going about, you know? And so I think just, you know, I want us to be, and this is something that we're going to be kind of like, you know, pushing in the next kind of like couple, 3 years here, is really expanding on what that definition is. You know, certain things we can't do that we're not going to be good at, right? Like, I am not going to solve the homeless problem in Oakland. Like, I personally cannot, but like, we would love to understand, like, and articulate and act on how Firebrand can impact the homeless problem, and how can we help people, and how can we like make a difference. And so I think as a business, we have to think just more holistically about our role in the community, as opposed to just like making money.
Yeah. And I think that's an amazing feat to undertake. And yeah, I love your mention of Michael Porter and how people like you and him and other purpose-driven professionals who are, yeah, like, again, we mentioned Greystone, you know, I feel like we're in the business of proving Milton Friedman wrong with this idea of we have to give back to our stakeholders. And it's so true. You're existing in this physical space, in this physical community. You can't turn a blind eye to, you know, how are you impacting the community around you as a business, as the products that you're selling, as the services that you're providing. I think what's really interesting on your website, and what Moritz and I were speaking about right before you joined the call, were these 11 purposes, or it almost looks like a manifesto that you have on your website. Sure. I'd be really interested to hear more, especially some of these coming soon programs that you have here.
Yeah. So those 11 purposes are in our corporate charter. So we are a steward owned company, which means 51% of the company is owned by a trust, and the trust governs the company, and the trust has to uphold those 11 purposes. Right. And so I think, so that's where the 11 purposes kind of came from a couple years ago, and kind of that's in our corporate charter. So we have a legal obligation to uphold those things. Things like becoming a B Corp or a paid volunteer program, some of those kind of like things we're working on for this year are, you know, not mandatory for us to do. We want to do them, but the, you know, the profit sharing, the open book management, the hiring practices, and, you know, our equitable supply chain, and that kind of stuff is stuff we legally have to do now. That I made it so that we were legally bound to do, because there's certain things, like going back to fucking Milton Friedman, it's like, I didn't want that voice in the room when it came to our purposes. Like, I didn't want the guy in the room to be like, well, like, you know, you make more money if you don't do X, Y, and Z, or like, I didn't want that voice in the room. And so it's like, that guy doesn't exist at Firebrand. Like, they legally can't. And we also knew that, you know, definitely makes it so like a little bit difficult when you have investor conversations with like potential like fundraising, makes it like pretty difficult to be like, yeah, and we have a profit sharing model. And by the way, you're investing in like a model that like legally requires you to take less money and be involved. And, you know, and it definitely is not for everybody, but, you know, it's like also we tried to put a lot of thought into like extractive capitalism and how much is a good return for you, and what does it mean? You know, like we go, like I was just at this like social impact conference, and it was just like, when I brought up that there's like a 5x cap on the returns, it was like, nope, have a good day. And you're like, you're not doing shit. Like, you do nothing. Like, what do you mean? Like, no, I'm not saying there's not a role for capital or capital providers. There is. They're hugely important. They're amazing. And Firebrand has amazing, amazing partners, but they're partners. And, you know, and I think like I can pick up the phone and call any of them and they'll help. I can have a question and they'll answer it. Like, they're partners. And we wanted that as part of the company. And I think there's this idea, this shareholder supremacy crap that has just like polluted the waters. And it's just, it's not like that people don't have a role that provide capital, but this like 7x in 3 years shit, the like 5x in 3 years, it's just like, it's so, like, there's no rule around that. Like, what's the rule? Where does it say you have to do that? And it's like, there's not. It's just the standard. I do what the standard is. It's like, well, then maybe do something different. You know, like maybe like prioritize long term, right? Like maybe be involved with the business for 10 years and you take less of a return over, but over a longer period of time. And then you build something, you know? And I think it's just like, we're trying to build something here and that's going to take time. And, you know, that was part of the reason of transitioning to a trust. It's like, the company's off the market, it can't be sold.
And do these purposes actually guide the employees of Firebrand? Or is it more of like a strategic thing that the employees, yeah, in your words, would maybe don't give a crap about?
No, so I mean, I think it's a mix, you know, but there's things in there that are tactical, you know, the open book management and some of the labor practices and the supply chain stuff, like a lot of it is very tactical. I think our job this year on like the trust stewardship committee, which governs the trust, is like figuring out like how do we make this actionable to staff? How do we like drive this down to all the staff members and then have that feedback come up? How do we make it so that everybody's on like singing the same song? That's going to take a while. I mean, it's going to take a long time. We have 85 people, different languages. We're 24 hours a day. Like it's fucking impossible to have a staff meeting here. So it's just like, you know, it's going to take a bit. So I think, but that's our job this year, is like figuring out how we do that, you know, and how do we make it so that they're not abstract? Like, cause I don't want them to be abstract. I don't want it to be like words on a wall that like no one fucking cares about. Like, you know, it's like, we care about integrity or some shit. Like, I don't want it to be like that. Like, I want it to be real. And so, yeah, that's a big task for us, you know, this year and the next couple of years, figuring that out.
Well, just speaking from a outside perspective, I'm guessing that your staff really does feel that social justice inside them, if they have a CEO like you. And
I don't know. Yeah,
I have a sense for that, I think. And right now we're going to do our only segment which we have on this podcast, which is called Purpose Preguntas. And I don't know, do you also speak Spanish in if you're in
California? You drop me in Mexico, I won't die. But if you ask me to be fluent, I can understand it really, really well. I can speak it decent.
Okay, but that wasn't the first question yet. So we have five questions.
Luckily, Moritz and I don't speak Spanish either, so you're in good company.
Are we totally going off rail here? I was like, I understand you, but yeah. Okay.
Well, we're going to ask these in Spanish. No. first question. We read that you wake up at 3 a.m. And why?
There's a couple of reasons. I like to be up when other people are not. I get a lot more work done. Often during my day, I get hit like bombarded with a lot of messages at 3 a.m. No one's really messaging me. I like to read. I get a lot of reading done. And I like to work out so I can work out then. So it's just a time when I'm not bothered as much. So.
Well, I was just explaining to a friend today, I don't understand people who could run in the mornings, but good for you for having such a
I can't in the afternoons or night. I can't, I'm just a mess, so yeah. No, it's perfect.
Well, good. I can't ever, so got one up on me there. This is more of a myth busting question. Sure. What is something that people could get wrong about Firebrand, or typically get wrong about Firebrand?
I don't know. I feel like I have my head so buried in Firebrand. I have no fucking clue. I don't know. I always say that Firebrand's like the band that doesn't listen to other records when they're making their record. Like, I just don't listen to a lot of noise in my life. And so, like, I don't particularly give a shit. But maybe I know we get kind of lumped in with, like, a hipster crowd, I guess, maybe. And
well, that... Yeah. If you don't listen to the crowd besides your own crowd, you're going to hate this question then, because we always want to ask also like critical questions, but it's difficult actually if we have like so nice brands. But I'm going to think, or let's think that we're haters right now. And
sure.
What's the criticism they mention when they're talking about your brand? What's something that you've heard a lot in maybe the last couple of months or years where you're just like, you're a hater?
I don't.
Only love?
Well, I just don't give a shit. Like, I don't know. I don't mean, it's not like me being flippant. I just don't care. Like, when I was in high school, okay, I stumbled upon the Man in the Arena speech by Teddy Roosevelt. Don't know if you've ever heard it. You should 1000% check it out. There's like a 2-minute stretch of that gets quoted ad nauseum on YouTube. You know, Brene Brown, you know, structured a whole book around that speech. It's called Man in the Arena. And I don't really give a shit unless you're doing what I like. If you're not the CEO of Grayston or the head of, you know, Shea Moisture, or one of these people that I really respect, you know, running Zingerman's, I don't give a fuck. I don't care. Like, I just, like, we're trying to get better and we're trying to improve and we're never where we want to be because we're always trying to get better. We're not perfect, like, at all. But unless you're here, I don't give a fuck. Like, if one of the 85 people here wants to come and like rip me a new one for some bullshit I'm doing, have at it. You have come at me. It's great. Like, I want to hear it. If you're just some person on the street that wants to talk shit, like, I don't give a shit. I don't lose any sleep over it.
Well, other than saying fuck the haters, our next question is, what's your hobby besides baking bread? I know it's something, it's, you know, you're saying you've been working in bakeries for a long, long time now. What's another hobby you'd like to get up to?
Hobby. I read a lot. I read a lot because, again, I'm doing shit else, so I try to learn. I have a wife. I have a daughter. So any time that I'm not here is devoted to trying to get more time there.
That's nice. And a lot of actually young entrepreneurs are listening to our podcast. And therefore, you're already experienced. And if you could give one advice to your younger entrepreneur, what would it be?
One advice to me. I think be more courageous with having tough conversations early. Yeah. I can expand on that if you want, but I just think, like, you know, like having boundaries and being very clear with people is a very, very good thing for everybody involved.
I feel like that's not just good business advice. That's just good life advice.
Life advice. Yeah.
I feel like, is that.
You know, sometimes you want to do good and you want to, but that doesn't mean be nice. That means be clear. No. And that's confusing, I think, for a while.
Yeah. I'm Canadian, so this whole idea of sugarcoating everything and being polite to the utmost degree can really make the boundaries foggy and not being so clear all the time.
I found it doesn't help.
So I guess one more question. I'm just really curious as to how people find out about Firebrand. I mean, of course, Moritz and I, we're here on the other side of the world. I'm in Berlin. He's in another part of Germany. So do people come to you because you just have amazing breads? I mean, they look delicious from what I see. Or do people more and more come to you because of, you know, your people first model and the fact that you're purpose driven?
I would say for the first 11 years, it was just the product, because we didn't really talk. I don't think we had a website for the first like decade of the business. And I'm not on social media. Like, I haven't posted anything on Instagram for 3 years almost or whatever. So, and I'm not on any other platforms. So, and I don't even think we had an Instagram up until like 2 years ago, but, so it was just the product, just word of mouth. Like, we had a online submission form on our website and people would fill it out. And then you know, chefs move around to different restaurants. And so that chef would go to another restaurant and then take us on there, and then go to another restaurant, take us on there. And that's kind of how we grew. The past like year, I would say a lot of this for like the mission, because we're talking about it now. But we didn't really talk about it for the first like 11 years. So I think people still really don't know that we do a lot of this stuff. That's just because we didn't talk about it. So, which was kind of on purpose, but yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a question Izzy and I were talking about earlier, of like, yeah, getting into the mindset of, yeah, we're walking through Oakland, and do like the consumers actually go pick or make that decision to go in your shop and buy bread due to purpose only, maybe? And yeah, maybe it's in our purpose bubble where we'll say, of course they are. They want to support you guys, but we know that also, yeah, it's a bubble, and yeah, you have better insights there, definitely.
This is mine and Moritz's way of telling you that we're gonna come to Oakland really soon, just so we can buy you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
are you gonna expand to Germany someday soon, or?
I'm good. I think I have my hands full with two cities that are like next to each other.
Okay, we're almost coming to an end here already, but I want to make actually like a bridge to the beginning of this talk, where you talked about people applying for jobs at Firebrand, and that, yeah, you said you don't give a shit about resumes, and it doesn't really matter where you're coming from. It matters how you're working here and what your effort is. And can you maybe just take us through that user journey of actually, I want to have a job at Firebrand. What's going to happen next?
So there's two ways to apply. One, you can go on our website and then just put your name, contact information, and then look at the jobs that we have open and say which one that you're interested in. And another way is, if you don't have computer access, you just do it the way we've kind of always done it since the beginning. And that's just the name on a clipboard with your contact information. And then we call you. That's really it. So we'll call you. We'll kind of go over the different jobs we have. You choose which one that you're interested in. And then we bring you in for a trial shift that we pay for. And we bring you in for 8 hours. And then, you know, we see if, you know, you could fit there, and if not there, then maybe something else. And if we don't have anything else and this is not a good fit, sometimes we'll bring people back for, you know, 1 to 3 different times, depending on kind of what the job is. And then we talk to about 85-90% of the decision is driven by your coworkers, kind of how they feel about how you did and how they feel about your ability to learn and listen and interact. Because we know that you're going to suck. Like, you don't have experience. Like, you're not going to like come in here and be like, oh yeah, I'm just like fucking banging out baguettes. But like, do you want to learn? Do you have questions? Like, that's what I give a shit about. Like, are you curious? Do you like, you know, like if the person who comes in and like doesn't ask any questions, like, I'm probably not going to be here very long. So we're kind of looking for that kind of stuff, more than anything. And then if your coworkers are stoked, we feel like you were, you know, it was going to be good, then, you know, we offer you a job and then you're on board. And then from there we have like what we call like a learning ladders program, which is like a kind of 0 to 1 year program of like making sure that you do, you know, we have obligations, you have obligations, you do your part, we do our part, and then to make sure you're as successful as possible.
And then it leads to delicious bread.
And you make bread and pastries. Yeah. Depending.
Beautiful. Well, I really admire that. And I wish there was more companies like you. Also just really proving that all of these hoops and ladders that you have to jump to get a job are kind of meaningless. Especially in entry level positions. I mean, the barriers, they just, I am actually not convinced as to why they exist. So we have one last question. And, you know, speaking about other companies and how I wish that other companies would apply these open hiring policies, are there companies that you look up to, for example, maybe not even in this realm, in the same industry, but just any companies that you look up to. We're always looking for more companies to interview, I guess, on Purpose Projects podcast. Not me necessarily. I'm just the guest host.
Yeah, here. Who knows?
Another takeover. But yeah. Any in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I always think Zingerman's is like amazing company in Ann Arbor. Their growth model is amazing, and their values are great, and how they train and think about operations are amazing. You know, Grayson Bakery is huge around open hiring and what they do, and then the services that they provide, and then, you know, Shea Moisture, how he was able to build that company to be this giant fucking monster, but like leverage his business to like serve the brand or serve the purpose rather than like the other, you know, it's just the way he kind of flipped how a business is like supposed to be oriented is crazy. There's a company here in the Bay Area called Reams, which is trying to like do a lot of good work around ownership and stuff like that.
We've never gotten so many good hints at good companies. I just wanted to mention actually that this talk actually happened due to that question, because we asked that question to all our guests at the end of our interview, and Camille Cannon mentioned you. And that's why we reached out. And so this was it. And Matt, I can't say thank you enough for this talk. It was really nice meeting you. It was really nice meeting Firebrand as a brand and what it stands for. And it was nice having you here.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Send some of the sun from Oakland to here.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Izzy, I think this is a match made in heaven. I'm really eager to hear how was it for you, not only talking to Matt, but also being the first guest host on this podcast.
The first accidental last minute guest host. I had so much fun. I felt like we were on, no pun intended, we were on fire. I just really enjoyed talking to Matt. It's so funny coming from North America. I really miss that kind of energy, you know, the like screw extractive capitalism. Like I really enjoyed, I really enjoyed talking to him and learning more. Just more and more here, you know, I had the opportunity to speak to Grayson Bakery last year and being part of a workshop with them in December. And then, you know, now hearing about Firebrand and Matt's story, I'm just so convinced that this is a model that can just, it can work anywhere. So I really hope that, you know, people who are listening to this really consider, you know, what are the barriers in my hiring process at my organization? Is it necessary? How can we involve more of the community that are marginalized? And by giving someone work and meaningful work is life-changing, right? It's not a handout in any way. So,
and
big fan.
I think what you just mentioned is, You're right. It's more like a blueprint for other businesses, which he is like implementing for the world to see. And I actually agree with everybody should now rethink their hiring policies and maybe have a look over at the West Coast to see how others are doing. And Izzy, I can't say enough. Thank you to you for being on this podcast. This is so cool.
Second time.
You've been here as a guest. Now you've been here as a host. Let's see what's next. And it was a 2-hour time frame for you being here. So thanks a ton. And everybody check out Izzy on LinkedIn and whatever she's doing. She's really, really busy in the purpose sphere. And for everyone else, follow this podcast and tell your grandmas and grandpas about this. And have a great day. Thanks, Izzy.
Bye-bye.